Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hi, my name is Brianna Contreras, and I'm Associate Editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this week's episode, I spoke with CEO of Scripta, Eric Levin. The two of us mainly discussed the current state of the pharmacy benefit market and how the Scripta organization has been assisting its clients and their prescriptions prior to the COVID-19 pandemic and during. How you doing, Eric?
I'm great. Good morning.
Good morning. So can you tell our listeners about Scripta? Now, I know the idea, I believe, is to apply data analytics and AI to the pharmacy benefits marketplace. So how does that work exactly? And can you tell our listeners about an example or two?
Sure, absolutely. So thanks. It's good to talk to you today. Scripta really was born from a doctor and his wife who happens to be a CPA. And the doctor was really frustrated because he kept seeing patients of his not getting better, and he would be prescribing them higher and higher doses of drugs, and he couldn't figure out why. And finally, you know, some of them started to fess up and say, you know, we're not taking our drugs because we can't afford it. And it started him down a mission to try to figure out what to do about that. And as we went through that, you know, one of the things he figured out was that in a lot of cases, you're prescribed a drug, but your doctor doesn't know how much that drug is going to cost when they prescribe it. Your employer who's paying, you know, if you're self-insured, the other portion of your drug doesn't know until 45 days later when they get the bill. And we live in this marketplace where prescription drug costs are basically, you know, secret. And so one of the things he realized was that if you think about this problem like a doctor, not necessarily like a pharmacist as much, doctors try to treat a disease state. And very often for a lot of disease states, there's multiple drugs that you could take that are very similar from a doctor's perspective. So started mapping sort of the core drugs on the market that he was dealing with his patients to potential ways to save money on those drugs. And over time, working with as many as 60 doctors at one point, right now we have a P&T or Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee of 27 doctors, we have been able to map pretty much every drug on the market to every way to save money on that drug. We have somewhere around 42 different strategies that falls into. And essentially the way that it works at the highest level is if you're a self-insured employer, you get a bill every month from your PBM. And if you're a large company, it could be $2-4 million, but you just pay it. Like imagine if you got an American Express card bill and it was written in ancient Greek and you just were like, oh, 4 million, I'll just pay that. Because it's so hard to decipher these bills and they're de-identified and the names of the drugs you can barely pronounce and the different dosages and it's this really difficult bill that's hard to pay. And so what we did was our founders started down a path of how could we start with that bill and start to help a buyer understand what they're actually buying and what alternatives there may be. Because, you know, traditionally technology has a tremendous track record of helping buyers be better buyers by giving them better information about their market they're buying in. And so that's really what we're all about in terms of the core of our company.
Okay, awesome. That's great. Now, can you share who your clients are?
Sure. So we have some, a lot of clients don't allow us to use their name in marketing, as you might imagine, and some do. So, you know, we have a large swath of companies everywhere from a coalition of small banks to several unions to large healthcare organizations to manufacturers. So we really cross the gamut. I think, you know, generally, in terms of what makes a good customer for us or vice versa. If you're a customer, why might you want to call us? Right. You know, if you are unhappy, if you feel like your bills have been increasing at a higher rate than, you know, what you're reading the benchmark should be, if you're self-insured is a must. And then I think importantly, the higher your deductibles, the better chance that we're going to be able to really make a big impact because we can better impact consumer behavior. But generally, you know, I would tell you that on average, when we get, so part of our sales process is that we'll do a free analysis and let you know how much we think is available to save. And we do that, you know, as part of our sales process, of course, like, you know, we're trying to get customers, but also because for us, if we are not going to be able to save the company money, they're not going to be a happy customer, and we'll do all this work and have an unhappy customer. That's not a good business, right? So we think it's a really good two-way street to do that. But on average, across all of the companies we come across, we find a 46% savings opportunity. So the savings on the table are massive. It's important to understand that that is the upper limit. Like, we're not telling anybody we're going to save you 46%. That would require every decision on every purchase to be made perfectly. And that's not the real world. But if there's 46% on the table, how much of that can we capture? And generally, we're going to get about a third of that annually. So, you know, about 15% a year. Okay. And depending on how aggressive or conservative our customer wants to be, because there are definitely some strategies that are very aggressive and some that are, you know, less aggressive. And some companies have very strong cost containment pushes and really want to be aggressive, and some less so. But generally, that's sort of how we look at the market and what makes a good customer for us.
Okay, great. Now, I looked at your LinkedIn profile, and it talks about the PBM marketplace as being the least transparent market in the country.
Yeah.
So, you know, more about like rebates and dark money. So who's to blame? And if, as they say, sunshine is the best disinfectant, is Scripta bringing sunshine to the market?
I hope so. I would love to think so. and I love that expression. I think one of the mistakes that people make when they get into this business is trying to bother blaming people. It gets you in a kind of a negative space, right? Like, we're gonna focus on what's wrong. We want to focus on how to fix it. So I think that there are many, many reasons for why it is as messed up as it is. And it is clearly messed up. I mean, I don't have a conversation with anybody, whether they're in the business or not, because, you know, you have that, you're at a barbecue and somebody says, hey, what do you do? And you explain it and they're like, hold on, that can't be right. It can't work like that, right? That's it. And even people in the industry are like, that can't be right. It can't work like that. But it's taken a long time to get there. So let's boil it down to, you know, high level economics. We'll all go back to our one economics class we took if we weren't business majors. So, you know, generally, if you had the more supply of something, right, and the less demand, the more, you know, price elasticity you're going to have. Let's put it another way. If I can buy the same thing from 10 different people, those 10 people are going to get pretty competitive about what price they're going to sell it to me for.
Right.
But we've come to a marketplace today where there's really an oligopoly of sellers, right? You have two PBMs that control, you know, 70% of the market, maybe three or 78%. So much concentrated selling power. And then because of the nature of the market, even if you're a big, big buyer, you might have, I don't know, 50,000 employees. Well, that's not a lot. In the big picture of 170 million, you know, people that are insured, 50,000 is nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we really have a situation where you have an oligopoly of sellers that control the market, right? And then you have all these disparate buyers. So they don't have a lot of market control, but more importantly, they don't have a lot of expertise. So generally, your self-insured employer doesn't have a pharmacist on staff or a doctor on staff or analytics capabilities for looking at this bill. They're generalists. And they hire benefits consultants who are generalists also, who may have a pharmacy department full of specialists backing them up somewhere, but there's 10 of those guys and they have 1,000 clients. So the question is, how can you transform a market like that? Mm-hmm. And we look at, if you look at, I mentioned earlier, other markets, technology has transformed. Think about the way we used to buy a used car. You're very young, so younger than me. But I remember when you go buy a used car, you would open the newspaper and you'd be looking for a car. And generally, the only cars available are the ones you could drive to on a Sunday and drive back. And if you're lucky, you might get to two car dealerships. Right. So if that's the case, you know, your choice of cars is kind of limited. I don't really know what a 2005 Honda Accord should cost. I visit a couple places. Now think about what the internet has done for that. I can go on cars.com. I can put in, you know, 2005 Honda Accord, 22,000 miles, and I will get 100 choices from all over the country.
Yep.
And you know what's amazing? They're all going to cost pretty much the same. Why? Because technology has created this visibility, this transparency, and transparency gives buyers power. So really, that's how we look at this, is like, we have this market that for a lot of reasons has become imbalanced. You have sellers with too much power, buyers with not enough power and not enough expertise. But you can use technology to flip the switch on that. And that's really what we're all about, is, you know, how you take the brain power. So we describe our business in, you know, geeky technical terms of it's data analytics meets expert systems. Well, what does that mean? Expert systems is we're able to take the brain power of 27 doctors and pharmacists and kind of take their thought process and codify it. And then data analytics means we can take all of this massive amount of data, and because of the computing power available today, take your bill and compare it against this 27 brains using software, and suddenly get an answer to something that would have, without the computing power we have today, taken a month, right? Like, I mean, and for the most part, a lot of what happens in our world today is still consultants with spreadsheets trying to do backwards looking analysis and figure out, and to be honest, they do a really good job, but it's just at one point in time. And since your population changes every day, that people get sick, people get healthy, people leave, people join. The drug market changes every day. So in the first 6 months of last year, there were, I think, 4,412 price increases on drugs. So take those two incredibly changing variables, put them together, and how on earth are you going to stay on top of that with a spreadsheet? You can't.
Right.
So because of the power of computing that we have today and data analytics, and as you get into machine learning, you're able to now start to just see things in the numbers that were hard to see before. And that's really what we do, is we help you see, you have the data already. The answer is there. You just can't get to it because it's too complex and you need too much information. And that's the problem we try to solve.
Okay, got it. Now, the Trump administration proposed banning rebates, but then pulled back on that proposal. What did you think of that decision? Are you in favor of banning rebates?
Yeah, so it sort of goes back to the same point of, like, you know, the system is the system. And we don't feel like we have a lot that we can do to change the system, but we think we can dissect the system to our clients' favor, right? So generally, we think rebates are a problem. They are part of the problem, not the whole problem, because they create false incentives in a system, right? And when you have false incentives in a system, you're gonna get bad results. That said, the rebate piece is only one piece, and generally people will find a way to make that up. I haven't thought of this in a long time, but I had a funny story very early in my career. I was in sales, and you know, when you're sales, you travel a lot and you fill out expense reports, right? And my boss was telling me that he had, when he was my age and went through all that, he said he was on a sales call, and it was food. So he was at a supermarket. He was putting together a display rack and he tore his raincoat. So he put in an expense report, and on the expense report was a new raincoat because he tore it at work and he needed a raincoat.
Right.
And his boss was like, "You can't expense a raincoat. What are you doing? That's not our problem." He said, "Fine." He came back with an expense report the next week and he just turned it and he said, "Find the raincoat." In other words, tell me I can't do that and I'm going to find another way to get you, right? So, like, right. You know, it's buried here somewhere, but you're not going to know where.
Right.
And I think it's a little bit of find the raincoat, right? So if I take away rebates, I'm going to get administrative fees. If I take away administrative fees, I'm going to get. And so one of the things we see is incredible differences between contracts, even from the same PBM. So if we have four clients that all have the same PBM, you would think, oh, they must have really similar contracts. The contracts are so complicated that it becomes, you know, find the raincoat, or our chief strategist likes to say a game of whack-a-mole. As soon as we hit this, this pops up. As soon as we hit this. So there's so many different variables they can play with that generally we think, yeah, rebates are bad, but just banning rebates, it's going to come up and get you another way. And at least rebates, we know where they are. Mm-hmm. So we can kind of go right after them today.
Okay. Now, to kind of piggyback off of that, with rebates, now, is the problem rebates themselves, or that the amounts are effectively a secret between the manufacturers and PBMs?
So In some cases, they're not secret anymore, right? There's more and more transparency on rebates. I think that, you know, fundamentally, and this is no news to anyone who lives in this world every day, and a lot of your readers I know do, the issue is that is the incentive system, right? So rebates incentivize high list prices, get you better places on a formulary because you can afford more rebates, right? So I remember, so I haven't been in this business forever. And I remember before I got into it, watching the Senate hearing on, what's it called? EpiPens.
Okay.
EpiPens. So the CEO of the company that makes the EpiPen saying, yeah, the prices went up 700%, but they really went down. And if you're not in this industry, you're like, hold on, like they went up, but they went down. Like right, that doesn't make sense. Once you're in this industry, you're like, oh, actually it does make sense. Right. And so there's these, you know, strange incentive systems that have to do with, you know, so rebates mean inflated prices mean these huge discounts. And it gives a lot of, it just makes, again, the whole opacity issue really challenging. You're trying to figure out what's really going on. You're trying to figure out what the right net price is. And ultimately, although it's not necessarily our core business, I think most Americans, most humans want everybody to get the medicine that they need. And there is a really negative impact to the rebate system to the underinsured and uninsured, because it does, it really raises net list prices, and list prices or cash prices is a lot of time what the uninsured or uninsured pay. And I don't think that's good. So for the self-insured employer that we work with, I think we can kind of wring that out of the system. It's not as big, but as a total system and wanting to have a healthy America, which ultimately means lower healthcare costs for everybody, which ultimately means lower insurance rates, right? So there's a whole domino effect that comes from this that's probably not good.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's turn to COVID-19. How has the pandemic affected your company in both its operations and your revenues?
Yeah. So, you know, I think we've been very fortunate. I feel very fortunate because it's a really difficult time. My wife's in the food business, and you know, very similarly, food has had some real winners and losers. It's been really challenging depending on who you sell to. So I really do feel for a lot of people. For us, you know, it's been not so painful, thankfully. And I think for a couple of reasons. One is that we're a tech company and we're a young company, and so we're very virtual and technology based anyway. So it wasn't too disruptive for our operations because we were already using Zoom and you know, all of the different technologies, and we were pretty dispersed. From a selling perspective, I think that it's created a little bit of a bifurcation in the market, which there's enough of the market that it's not too painful to us. One half of the market, I think, was so, the HR departments, who are really our core customer, has been so overwhelmed dealing with COVID issues that they haven't had the bandwidth to think about what they want to do for 2021 and what changes they want to make, or even any desire for additional changes. So they've sort of said, like, this has been overwhelming enough. We're just going to go status quo for next year because we're just trying to get through. And then the other half of the market, or I don't know if it's half, I don't have any, but the other part of our customer base is in a very different situation. They're going, this was a huge distraction. Now we're behind the eight ball. We have to move really quick for open enrollment 2021. And we got to save every penny we can. Like, our budgets got killed. And so from that perspective, what we're seeing is a lot of business. So, you know, we've been really overwhelmed in a positive way with new prospects and hopefully potential customers. We're in the selling process, right? So based on the seasonality. So, you know, but things look really, you know, pretty good. And I think the other piece that comes out of it is, part of what we do is consumerism based, right? So we help the employee save money by pointing out to the employee what drugs they might want to discuss with their doctor that would be less expensive. Mm-hmm. And employers know that, you know, employees are feeling a pinch. Like in my own case, it may not be my job, but my wife's job is affected, right? So home budgets are feeling a pinch. And so I think that, the consumer focused part of our business has seen an incredible boom versus pre-COVID.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Now, how has, which is maybe a little repetitive, how has COVID affected the pharmacy benefits market?
Yeah, so I think it's been interesting. We one of the things we did was as I mentioned earlier, part of what we do is help people find potential options for the drugs that they're on. And knowing that there might be supply chain disruptions, we actually opened up our database for the first time ever for free, and people can go on and do a search for a drug substitute off our website. We have a COVID page. So if you're taking a drug and there's a supply chain shortage, we'll help you try to figure out if there's another drug that might be able to fill the void for you. And really, this has meant during that time, everything felt so out of control, and it was a really hard time for people, right? So if you get some semblance of control as a consumer, isn't it nice if you call your doctor and say, hey, I can't get my drug, I did this search, what do you think of these, as opposed to like, what do I do, so we did that. Fortunately, it got used, but not that much. And that's great, right? Like, this was a tool that we built hoping no one would ever need it, because it was really built only if there were shortages. And we haven't had too many outpatient shortages. Most of the shortages have been inpatient, in hospital drugs, sort of a whole different place, right? So the remdesivir type things that you hear about a lot,
right?
And so for the most part, we haven't seen the only other place I guess we've seen changes is pre-filling, and it's something we recommended. Telling people, pre-fill, move to mail order, some of the really basic strategies I know you've covered in your articles about what to do. We've seen some of that go on as well, which we also think is great. And our point of view on this whole thing was, if you're on a maintenance med, you've got to stay on it, right? If you don't, your risk for COVID goes way up. And so if there's anything we can do to help make sure that you're getting that maintenance med, we want to help. And I think with the exception of asthma drugs, there really weren't too many shortages, and even those didn't get too bad. So all in all, I think it was a lot better than it could have been.
Okay, great. That's good to hear. So, yeah. Because there aren't as many shortages, and of course there are still some, I know this is something mentioned before, or at least before our interview, what do you do when your prescription isn't available at the pharmacy counter, and why?
Yeah. First and foremost, you have to call your doctor, right? So you always got to put that out there. But I think you can always research what other options are out there. I just believe as a consumer, you always want to advocate for yourself. So as good as your doctor is, and as much as you might like them, they're busy and they got a lot going on, especially during COVID. They were really overwhelmed. The more you can do to self-advocate and self-research before you have that discussion with your doctor, I think you're going to feel better about it, if nothing else. And there are drugs that there's no other option. I mean, that's just the way it is. But there are so many, especially the maintenance drugs. There are so many where if you can't get one, another one probably will get the job done. And in fact, most doctors would say, you can take this or that or the other. Which one do you want? They're all clinically very similar. For take high blood pressure, is a really good example of there's a lot of drugs, there are a lot of generics, and a lot of times it's just, let's try this one, see how it goes, as opposed to this is absolutely the only one for you.
Right.
We sort of tell people just, make sure that you advocate for yourself, do the research you can. We have a tool there to help if you need it. But even just knowing that that is a concept can help you have a more informed discussion with your doctor. Just to call up, rather than saying, I can't get my medicine, to call up and say, hey, I'm having trouble getting my medicine. A, do you know where I can get it? B, if I can't get it, what do you recommend that I can substitute for it? Just to have a more, proactive kind of discussion.
Right. Okay. Now, to go back a little bit, personally, what is your level of optimism these days? Do you think there's going to be a serious economic downturn? And are you optimistic about a vaccine?
So I'll start with the second piece. I'm very optimistic about the vaccine. In fact, our chief medical officer also is a partner in a clinical trials business and has been doing clinical trials on the vaccines. And so we have some pretty good firsthand knowledge about how they're going, and they've been going really well. So I'm very optimistic about the vaccine. I've been pretty, like so many people, pretty wrong about the economy so far. I'm pretty shocked at kind of what's been going on, and especially the disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street, so to speak. I don't know how you could have, 35 to 40 million people be unemployed for a period of time and not see a ripple effect through the economy. Right. It just doesn't make logical sense to me, nor does it make economic sense to me. And I am a business, so my background is a business background, and mm-hmm. I've worked on a lot of economies over the years. I think it's got to tighten up. I just don't see any way around it. And if you look at certain sectors of our economy, restaurants certainly are not out of the woods, and retail was hanging by a thread before all of this. I mean, they were barely surviving. Right. So if you just look at the impact on just two sectors, so between retail and restaurants, you've got, 30, 40, 50 million employees that work there. I don't see how it can't be difficult, at least for Main Street America, right? I mean, clearly the stock market's doing its own thing, and if you're in that world, great. you made a good career choice, I guess. I think it's going to be a little tough next year. I do think because of the stimulus and the government interaction, that's what's changed everything. So the one reason that we haven't seen more of a collapse is the government has stepped up massively.
Right.
So let's hope that does keep it like very mild as a general recession. And so that's really what we're planning for. Although we are in a very fortunate position as a business, although this is one of those things where, I don't want this to be why we're successful. I don't want to be successful because the economy is bad. I want to be successful because we have a great product. Right. But having a bad economy does make our product more desirable, because ultimately we're in the cost containment business. And when budgets are tight, you look for every penny you can squeeze out of a system. And most of what we do is squeeze waste out. I mean, ultimately, we're in the waste reduction business. There's very little that we do that it's like, oh, you really need to have that, and we're taking away from you. I mean, never happens. Like, that's, we're not in that we take drugs away from people business. We're in the, why are you paying $400 for a drug you can buy for $4 business? And so, when times are tough, that certainly becomes more attractive.
Right. And can you agree that, I mean, just during this time, during, with the pandemic, it's challenged a lot of organizations and businesses to really show their strengths or become creative in some sort. So, I mean, as harsh as it is on our economy, I think it's forcing a lot of businesses to really, I don't want to say step up their game, but,
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I a friend of mine owns a car dealership, and it's really difficult times. But the interesting conversation I just had for him was, and this is where, sometimes economics is a bit cruel, right? It's a bit Darwinian, and that's just sort of, a sad fact of life. He said, business is awful, but what they realized was that they had a lot of waste in their system. And he's like, we've actually managed to get back to a small level of profitability just by eliminating this bloat that we didn't realize we had. And it had crept into our business because we've been in a 10-year bull market. So you sort of take your eye off the cost control measures a little bit. And I don't think he's alone. I think a lot of companies will find themselves, sort of going, oh boy, we were a little bloated. I hope that is more around other things and not employees, because nobody likes to see people lose their jobs. But it is a harsh fact of economics that it does happen from time to time. And I think there's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah. Okay. Now to kind of go back, to Scripta, and I know when you mentioned, you guys are very technology focused and, focus on like data analytics, mm-hmm. You guys have Scripta AI. So has that helped a lot during this time?
So that's really the name of our core software program, right? So okay. That's really the basis of all of our technology. It's the software that runs. And I think, you know, there's so much buzz around AI, right? What does it mean? And most people who are kind of in the business talk more about machine learning than AI. That sort of is a better, it seems more realistically what is happening than, mm-hmm. than it's artificial intelligence. The machine's just learning based on certain rules. For us, go back to our core business, which is, like I said, an expert system combined with a data analytics system. So if you think about what an expert system is, again, it's a brain dump from a lot of doctors and pharmacists, a lot of smart people. And what do they really do? They have rules or thought process. Like, so if you think about a thought process as a rule, so you say, so how does a doctor think about if we go to them and say, hey, this particular drug is expensive. I use this one example a lot because it happened to me a long time ago. I was prescribed. So, you know, Dymista is a really good allergy medicine, but it's really expensive. So how does the doctor start to think about solving that problem? You don't normally, because we're human and our brains are amazing, right? But normally we just go, oh, boom, boom, boom. We may Google something. But if you slow down and say, what's the thought process you're actually going through? And can we draw a diagram of that thought process? Well, first I check this and then I check this. And based on checking this, I branch to this. It's a tedious process, but ultimately you're taking the way you think and you're turning it into a set of rules. And really what we're talking about when we talk about machine learning is taking that set of rules and first building them out, then being able to use them enough that you see patterns and commonalities in the rules. And again, it goes back to this big data thing. Like, so if I do something 10 times, I can't really see a pattern, but if I do it 100,000 times, I might see a pattern start to emerge and I can kind of, learn from that pattern. So for us, that's really where it fits in. And there's enormous potential in it. Again, just because, let's face it, there's not enough people who are doctors and pharmacists to be there for when you go to the pharmacy and they're like, hey, you got Dymista, it's $423. You want to be able to go like, hold on, let me get my P&T committee on the phone. Hey guys, Dymista is $423. What should I do?
Right.
It's essentially what we do is we put it in your phone. So now you go to your phone, you go to Dymista, and the thought process of our 27 doctors goes, boom. Oh, well, that's just fluticasone and azelastine mixed in the same bottle. Get them separately, it only costs $32. Essentially, we've taken and codified and created code around a pretty, what is a simple process, but because it's done in the human mind, a complicated process, because we are able to skip so many steps the way that we think. But in reality, our brains are going through those steps just really fast.
Okay, great. Now, lastly, if there's just any other additional information about the market in general or Scripta that you'd like to share.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered a lot. It was great questions. Thank you. I think for us, the only thing we didn't talk about that we talk about a lot with our clients is the minute you sign your PBM contract, it's out of date, because the market changes so much and the population changes so much. And this is something that I think we have to educate our clients a lot on. They go, well, we just signed a contract. What are we going to do? There's always something you can do. Like, and some contracts, there might be 50 things we can do, and some there might be 3 things we can do. But those 3 things, depending on which ones they are, could be worth millions. Like we have a client where we literally flipped a switch. There's for lack of a better word, an on-off button in their contract. You can either use this program or not use this program. You just have to say, I want to use this program according to your contract, and they'll give it to you. And that program saved them $2 million.
Wow.
So there's the idea that you can sign a contract, wait till the end of the year and see how you did, or that you're going to get all of your analytics from your supplier, which is what most people do, right? So they go, so their PBM actually comes in and goes, look at what a great job we did. Here's 24 pages of analytics to say we are awesome. And here's a couple things we'll point out to just make it look like we're doing our job, but generally we're great. What part of your business do you do that in? Like, is there any other part where you go to people like, hey, before I pay you, can you tell me how good you're doing? Oh, you're doing really well. Awesome. Then I'm definitely going to pay you. Nobody does that, right? Like, everybody knows the cost of a paperclip to the ounce, right? To the gram, but nobody knows what, doxycycline costs. No, right? Nobody knows what remdesivir should cost. And it's so different for everybody. because every contract is different. So really, I think the idea that you set and forget your PBM contract, as soon as you walk away from that thought and say, I am going to manage my PBM actively on a monthly basis, which isn't to say we're going to, you know, we're going to fight with them or we think that they're bad people. No, they have a business to run. We have a business to run. Just like every other business, we're just going to make sure we understand what they're buying and we're going to try to take advantage of every opportunity we can to buy better, like every other part of your business. Get that mentality into your PBM, into your pharmacy benefit, and you will be shocked how much money you will save. And I think the only reason people don't do it today is because it is such a complicated, specialized area that they haven't had the tools. And with today's software and hardware and the ability to process big data the way we can, that's changing. And that's really what we're about is like, you know, you've been bringing, you know, a knife to a knife fight, and we're going to give you a bazooka to bring to a knife fight. So let's go. Let's save you some money.
All right. Sounds great. Well, yeah, that's, again, that's all I have for you. I really appreciate you, you coming on and talking to us and kind of explaining a little bit more about, you know, PBMs and Scripta to our listeners and viewers.
Yeah, thank you so much. They were great questions, and I look forward to keeping in touch as the market continues to evolve.
Yes, I hope so. All right. All right, have a good one.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Apple Podcasts, and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on MHE, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.